the election. Yes, it's a while away. But for 30 days leading up to it, there's what's called a systems freeze. Nothing computer-related can be changed in any way. It's the same kind of thing the credit card companies and online retailers do heading into Black Friday and Christmas. It makes sure no one loads new software that turns out not to work properly and screws everything up at their most critical time. So if we can't positively confirm that the Sentinel hasn't been compromised before then, we have a real problem. And if, when we get our hands on Rutherford's server, we don't even know what we're looking for. There could be thousands of documents on there, and I very much doubt one of them will be labeled Identity of Russian Spy. All kinds of cross-referencing will be needed. Lateral thinking. Reading tea leaves and casting chicken bones, probably. So the bottom line, like I said, is we need that thing yesterday. I'll tell Rutherford to search quickly. And anyway, how many trash heaps can there be in a town this size? Finding the server's not the only problem. You said you care about keeping Rutherford safe? And? The original plan was for us to snatch Rutherford. He'd give up the item, the server, as we now believe, or its location, and then, overcome by shame and depression after losing his job and bearing the blame for the ransomware attack, he would kill himself. I'm the senior operative, so it would have been me who staged it. Obviously, I'd have made sure Rutherford walked away. Only before that could happen, you arrived and put half the team on the disabled list. The rest of us have been switched to surveillance only. A new guy is being brought in to finish the job. A specialist from Moscow. He'll outrank me. So if you leave and he gets his hands on Rutherford, there may be nothing I can do about it. Chapter 17. Reacher drove the 6 miles from the factory to the town with 6 words on his mind. 48 hours, and need to know. The issue of timing was the more straightforward in a conceptual sense. They had a 2-day window to operate with relatively little interference while Fisher's cell was restricted to surveillance. After that, things would get more difficult. The offensive would resume. Reinforcements would arrive. A specialist from Moscow, outranking Fisher, with unknown capabilities, but certainly unsympathetic to Rutherford, which meant that if they were going to retrieve the server and turn it over to the FBI, it would be advantageous to do so before the new guy got his feet on the street. The issue of secrecy was more difficult to resolve. It brought practical considerations into play. Back when Reacher had run the 110th MP Special Investigation Unit, he had tended to be open with his people. Sometimes more open than he should have been. More open than his superior officers would have liked anyway, if they'd known. But Reacher trusted his team. He had handpicked each of them. He had worked with them. He could predict how each of them would respond in any given situation. And besides, when you were dealing with the likes of Francis Nagley, trying to keep anything hidden was a fool's errand. Reacher liked Rutherford. He had no wish to keep him in the dark. Not just for the sake of it. But he didn't know him in the same way. Rutherford had already expressed a reluctance to let the authorities have the server. His eye was on the prize he thought his Cerberus system could win for him. Reacher was fairly certain he would change his mind if he understood the full implications. The Sentinel, the integrity of the election, the Russians, discord and division. But there was no way to bring him into the picture without revealing that there was an agent in place in one of the Russian cells, or at least implying it. And if something went wrong and Rutherford fell into the Russians' hands, there would be no way he could avoid spilling that information, either now or later if they came back to run some kind of post-mortem into what went wrong with their operation, when Reacher wouldn't be around to watch out for him. When Reacher got back to Mitch's apartment, he realized that he needn't have worried about instilling any sense of urgency into the other two. The lure of the almighty dollar had taken care of that for him. Sands had started digging first thing that morning, but she'd turned up nothing useful, so Rutherford had taken up the baton. He had started trawling through the files on his laptop the moment Reacher left for the factory. He found the minutes of a heads-of-department meeting he must have dozed through the previous month. One of the agenda items had been the town's refuse contract, and a follow-up note confirmed it had been renewed for another year with a local company, Warhurst's Waste Away Express. He Googled their contact information and Sands called their office. She said she was writing a story about responsible refuse management for the Tennessean. She had to try 4 different people before she found someone who believed her. But she did finally manage to finesse the information they needed. The town's surplus or obsolete electronic equipment was separated from the regular trash. Then it was sent for recycling at a facility 11 miles west of town. She and Rutherford were on the verge of leaving to investigate the place when Reacher arrived at the door. Reacher didn't like the sound of a recycling plant. It conjured visions of equipment being dismantled and harvested for parts, or melted down, or crushed, or pulped, or otherwise rendered useless. He sensed the prospect of retrieving the server in serviceable condition receding into the distance, which at least made his second decision easier. He figured there was no need to mention what he had learned about its contents or who needed to see it. Not at this stage. Not until they found out for sure whether the thing still existed. "There's dirt on your shoes," Sans said when Reacher joined her and Rutherford on the elevator. "And on your pants legs. So you must have showed up at the factory. But it's not noon yet, so you didn't wait. What happened? What brought you to your senses?" "Nothing happened," Reacher said. "I got there early as planned. The opposition showed up as expected, but only one of them this time. And she didn't hang around very long." "Why only one of them?" Sans said. "And why didn't she wait? At least until the appointed time, to see if you even took the bait. It makes no sense." "Maybe she got a message calling her away," Rutherford said, "like yesterday. Maybe the doorman thought he saw me leaving and texted in a wrong report." "Sounds plausible," Reacher said. "But who really knows why anything happens?" Reduce, reuse, recycle. That was a mantra Reacher was familiar with. The first 2 parts he was personally acquainted with because of his mother. She was a kid during World War II and grew up in France during the occupation. Food was in short supply. All kinds of essentials were. Clothes, shoes, fuel. If something ran out or wore out or was lost or broken or stolen, it may never have gotten replaced. Recycling was a different story, though. There hadn't been much of a role for it at the military bases that Reacher grew up on all around the world. As far as he knew, it may have gone on behind the scenes at West Point during his 4 years there, but if so, he hadn't been aware of it. He'd had other things on his mind. So his concept of it was very much a product of his imagination. He pictured it as something new and high-tech, involving shiny modern plants with advanced equipment and lots of automation, maybe even robots. The reality was very different, at least at the facility the town used. It was surrounded by a 10-foot-high fence made of metal strips, divided and sharpened at the top and draped in razor wire. Very old school. Inside the gate, the operation was ingenious rather than advanced. The blacktop gave over to compacted dirt, rising and turning to form a broad, elevated half-donut before dropping back down toward the exit. Within the semicircle, there were 6 dumpsters, extra large, with no lids. They were arranged end-on, meeting in the center like the spokes of a wheel. Each one was dedicated to a different material. Giant signs specified which kinds. Paper and cardboard went in the first, then glass, ferrous metal, non-ferrous metal, plastic, and finally a catch-all for any other kinds of trash that had been brought there by mistake. Reacher assumed the recycling trucks would drive up, swing around to the appropriate dumpster, and unload. The height and width and incline and turn radius had probably been calculated specially. There was only one snag that he could see. There was no place designated for electronic equipment. Sans stopped the minivan between the 3rd and 4th dumpsters, and Reacher climbed out to investigate. He discounted paper and glass and was wondering whether computers could be classed as plastic due to their outer cases, or metal due to their inner workings, when he heard a voice, a man's, yelling at him. "Hey," the guy said, "the hell are you doing?" You can't be here. Where's your permit? The guy had emerged from a porta cabin that was hidden from the entrance to the site by the earth mound. It was presumably some kind of an office, or a place to hide from the sun. He looked to be in his mid-60s. His face was burned and wrinkled like a walnut. His hands were shriveled, and the veins and tendons stood out like cords under his skin. His hair was thin and gray and tangled, and it hung down past his shoulders. Technically, he was wearing faded blue coveralls with some kind of corporate logo on the chest, but he was so skinny and the material was so stiff from the laundry, it looked like the clothes had swallowed him. "Computers," Reacher said. "Which dumpster would they be in?" "Get back in your car," the guy said. "Leave, right now, or I'm calling 911. "It's no good calling 911. The police department's phones are down. Haven't you heard? And there's no need. We'll be happy to leave. Just as soon as we pick up something that got sent here by mistake. Something that belongs to us." "If it's here, it belongs to us. It says so in the contract with the town. You take something, you're stealing it. Can't have that." The guy ducked back into the cabin and reappeared a moment later holding a shotgun. A Benelli M1 Tactical. A nice weapon. Shipped in all the way from Italy. Capable of holding 6 12-gauge cartridges. It looked brand new. "That's why the company gives us these. And trains us how to use them." Reacher wasn't entirely convinced that a recycling company would hand out military-grade weaponry to its employees. And he was certain that this particular employee had not gone through any kind of training. Not in the last 30 years, anyway. Given the state he was in, if the guy pulled the trigger, the recoil would knock him on his ass. Break his collarbone, for sure. Maybe his whole shoulder. But if he pulled the trigger from that range, any damage the guy did to himself would be the least of Reacher's worries. He was conscious of the captured Beretta in his waistband. The old guy's movements had been pretty slow up to that point. Putting him out of action before he could bring the Benelli to bear would be pretty straightforward, but maybe a bit premature at that stage. It was a little early to abandon diplomacy altogether. Reacher started to move away from the minivan, very slowly, just in case negotiations failed. "Hold it," the guy said. He raised the shotgun to his shoulder. "I told you to get in the car, not move away from it." The driver's door opened and Sands climbed out. She had a black leather wallet in her hand. She held it out in front of her at shoulder height like a tiny shield. "Federal agents," she said. "Put the gun down." Diplomacy, Reacher thought. Or lying. It could be hard to tell them apart. The old guy lowered the gun, but he didn't let go of it. "What's your name?" Sands said. The guy hesitated for a moment. "You can call me Polk." "Okay then, General. Here's what we're going to do. First, you're going to answer a question. The electronic equipment that gets brought here from the town, what happens to it?"
"It gets stored, along with electronics from our other clients. Then it gets taken away."
"Who by?" The guy shrugged.
"Whoever buys it, I guess. One year it's one guy, the next year someone else. I don't get to pick."
"When do they take it? How often?"
"Once a month. First Monday, usually. Unless they're late, which they sometimes are."
"So everything that came in the last 3 weeks is still here?"
"Right. Why wouldn't it be?"
"Where?"
The guy gestured over his shoulder to the cabin. "In there. Locked up."
"Show me." Sands started down the slope.
"Hold it," the guy said. "You got a warrant. You can't come in demanding to see stuff without one. I know my rights. We've had training."
Sands continued until she was standing right in front of him. Reacher tracked her movement, keeping 6 feet to the right. "You want paperwork, huh?" Sands tipped her head to the side. "I'm surprised.
You don't look much like a paperwork kind of guy. But that's no problem.
Not for me, anyway. Got a fax machine in there?
I can get warrants.
Subpoenas. Criminal records. Whatever I want."
"Assuming that's a path you want to go down."
The guy didn't respond. "Anything in the system your bosses don't know about?" Sans said. "Yet."
"Assholes," the guy said. He ducked back into the cabin and replaced the Benelli in its rack, then led the way to the far end of the structure. He worked a lock, pushed down on a handle, which took all his weight, heaved open a pair of doors, leaned inside, hit a switch, which brought four pairs of fluorescent tubes flickering into life, then stood to the side. "See for yourself," he said. "It's all there." The space accounted for half the footprint of the cabin. There were gray metal shelves, floor to ceiling, lined up around all three walls. Some smaller items were scattered on the shelves nearest the entrance. Reacher could see cell phones and cameras and DVD players and a couple of laptops. But the main action was on the floor in the center of the room. There were dozens of computers and keyboards and monitors and printers and widescreen TVs, along with a bunch of other devices Reacher didn't recognize. All heaped up together, all tangled in a chaotic jumble of cables and wires like a giant electronic spider had been absorbing it into its web. "Which ones are they?" Reacher moved to let Sans get a better view. "Can you tell?" "I don't know," Sans said. "There's no sign of the cabinet they were in. But that did have a broken door. They probably took the servers out and threw the rest of it in one of those dumpsters. Better get Rusty down here. I'll need help finding them in all this junk." "I'm here." Rutherford appeared from around the corner of the cabin. He looked into the room and nodded his head. "All right. They must be buried in the middle of all this. Come on, let's get to work. I want all eight of them, just in case." Rutherford scrambled through the mess to the far side on the basis that each new delivery was apparently shoved in on top of the last, and the servers could have been there for a couple of weeks. Sans handed her purse to Reacher and went in after him. It was hot inside. The roof was made of metal. So were the walls. There was an air conditioner, but it only cooled the office area, not the storage side. It was as if their prize was hidden in an oven. Reacher stayed outside. It wasn't a great deal cooler in the direct sun, but he wanted to keep an eye on the guy with the gray hair. He knew the man pulling Marty's strings had put out an order to watch for Rutherford, the man with a liking for suitcases and bone saws. There was no reason to believe the gray-haired guy was involved, or that Fisher's cell would be put back on active duty if anyone called in a sighting. But plans change. Opportunities present themselves. Sometimes they're too good to resist. They were in a remote location. Two of them were in an enclosed space. And the guy had a shotgun. Rutherford and Sans continued to sift through the mound of discarded equipment. The gray-haired guy leaned one shoulder against the cabin wall and watched them. He made no move for his phone, or a panic button, or an alarm. The sun continued to beat down. Reacher continued to watch all three people, until finally Rutherford and Sans emerged into the open air. They were blinking against the light. Their clothes were clinging with sweat. Their skin was smeared with dust. And their hands were empty. Sans took back her purse. Rutherford approached the gray-haired guy. "Where's everything else?" The guy straightened up.
"Like what? This is everything."
"It can't be. Some things are missing. Eight things, at least. From the town IT department." The guy shrugged.
"Where else could they be? You accusing me of something?"
"What? No. Is there another site somewhere is what I mean? Like an overflow?"
"No. Everything comes here."
"Who else works here?" Reacher said.
"No one. Just me."
"What if you're out sick or on vacation?"
"My boss would send someone to fill in for me."
"When was the last time that happened?" The guy chewed on his lower lip for a moment.
"Let's see. Last time I was sick was 1986, in the summer. I had my appendix taken out at Vanderbilt. Nice place. And my last vacation? It was at the Millennium. I went to Canada to see my brother. Used to go every New Year's. But now he's dead."
"I don't get it," Rutherford said. "These things, what could have happened to them? They can't have disappeared into thin air." The guy shrugged again.
"If they're not here, whatever they are, then they never came. Or they've already been taken away again."
"What about sight logs?" Sans moved across and stood next to Rutherford. "You must keep records of what comes in and out." Deliveries and collections, the guy said.
Sure.
Show me. The guy sighed, then led the way to the entrance to the office. He indicated that everyone should remain outside and ducked through the door, reappearing a moment later with a clipboard in each hand. He passed the first one to Sands. Reacher read it over her shoulder. It was for collections. There were 8 entries for the current month, but only one for electronics. It was dated the 2nd, before the ransomware attack. Before Rutherford had trashed the servers. So before they could have arrived at the facility, let alone been removed. Sands swapped clipboards. The second one listed the deliveries. There had been 32 so far that month. The most frequent kinds were glass and non-ferrous metal. Bottles and cans from the local bars and restaurants, Reacher guessed. Then paper. Probably a surge due to the municipal computers being down. Electronics was all the way at the bottom. There had only been 2 consignments. Both had come from the town's IT department. And both were after Rutherford had discovered his backup had failed. The electronics deliveries. Here and here, Sands said, pointing at the entries. Show me the itemization for those. The guy looked at her blankly for a moment.
What itemization? We don't list all the things that come in. How could we? There are too many, and what would be the point?
Computer mouse, beige, not working. Computer mouse, beige, not working. Computer mouse, beige, not working. How would you tell one from the other?
Okay.
Sands pointed to another entry on the sheet next to the column for the delivery vehicle's license plate. Driver ID. It's the same both times. Number 083. Whose number is that? The guy looked at the signature line.
Dave's.
Dave Tomasino.
Where can we find him?
Sands said.
How would I know? He's a delivery guy. He drives in, drops off a bunch of stuff, and drives away again. It's not like we hang out.
What's his route today?
How would I know? I'm not his boss.
When's his next delivery scheduled?
No idea. The guys just show up when their trucks are full and they need to unload.
Where does he live?
No idea. Like I said, we're not buddies.
What about his truck? Reacher said. Does he take it home at night?
No.
The guy shook his head.
They're not allowed to. They leave the trucks at the depot, drive home in their own vehicles.
Do they work on their own? Reacher said. Or in pairs, or teams?
For the bigger stuff, it's 2 men to a truck, the guy said. Tomasino's is smaller. He works alone. You don't need 2 men to toss in a bunch of iPhones or whatever.
Where's the depot? Sands said.
Next to the office, the guy said.
Where's the office? And don't say next to the depot or we're going to have a problem.
I'll write the address for you.
Write Tomasino's cell number as well.
I can't. I don't know it.
Good, Sands said. Make sure it stays that way. Because if Tomasino doesn't show up at the depot for any reason, I'll be coming back. And you'll be spending whatever time you have left on this earth in a federal penitentiary.
Chapter 18. Reacher, Rutherford, and Sands left the guy with his clipboards and trudged back up the slope. They climbed into the minivan. Sands fired up the engine. She cranked the air all the way up and set off slowly, following the curve around and down and off the dirt and through the exit gate and back out onto the blacktop. No one spoke. Reacher sprawled out in the back. He was thinking about the servers, about what might have happened to them. He had 2 plausible theories. Option A was that they'd been trashed. He pictured the guy, Tomasino, going to collect them. Tomasino worked alone, which was probably fine when he was picking up small things like cell phones. But there were 8 servers. They were housed in a cabinet. It was 6 feet tall, heavy, hard to maneuver, stuck on some kind of irregularity in the floor. And its door was broken. Glass shards would be sticking out, making it dangerous to handle as well as difficult. The log showed that Tomasino arrived at the recycling center after 5 p.m. on each occasion, probably his last job on both days. Would he have bothered to wrestle with the cabinet on his own, so close to the end of his shift? Or would he have slipped the men on the regular garbage duty a couple of crisp 20s to take care of the problem for him? Option B assumed Tomasino would have made the effort to remove the cabinet, or at least its contents. It was only Rutherford's experimental software that had failed. The servers themselves were in working order. Maybe Tomasino kept an eye out for such things. Maybe he had a regular buyer on standby. Reacher had no idea what secondhand computer equipment was worth. Maybe a lot. Maybe not very much. The reward may not have been high, but the risk was virtually non-existent. How would the theft ever come to light under normal circumstances? The town guys would be happy because their unwanted items had been removed. The recycling guys would never know to expect them, because nothing was itemized. So, laziness or greed? Even money in Reacher's experience. Impossible to pick between them without knowing more about Tomasino. And most likely irrelevant anyway. The servers could have been crushed or incinerated or sent to a landfill. They could have been wiped and restored to factory settings and sold. Either way, the data would be lost. The identity of the Russian spy would remain a secret, and Rutherford would still be in danger. Reacher would have to decide what to do about that. Staying in town to babysit him indefinitely was out of the question. So was leaving him alone and vulnerable. The best option would be to persuade him to get out of town, but Reacher had tried that. He saw little hope of getting Rutherford to change his mind. Not without divulging dangerous information. Maybe Sands could help, he thought. She was ex-bureau. He could talk to her. Hint at the source of the problem. Obliquely enough to avoid compromising Fisher. Directly enough to stress the urgency. That might work. Unless Tomasino rendered the problem moot. Maybe he would serve up a miracle. Maybe the servers were sitting safely at his house, untouched, contents intact. Hope for the best. Given a free hand, Reacher would have proceeded directly to the depot. The site log showed Tomasino working past 5 p.m. on the days he delivered electronics to the recycling facility, but there was no guarantee those were his regular hours. The safest course would be to locate the truck driver's personal vehicles as quickly as possible and wait. An hour. 2 hours. Five. As long as necessary. It was all the same to Reacher. He could wait all day. But he could see it wasn't the same for Sands and Rutherford. They were cranky after failing to find their equipment, probably worried about their prospects of ever recovering it, and definitely uncomfortable after rooting around inside the hot metal cabin. He was going to have to cut them some slack. Unless he went to find Tomasino on his own, which was a possibility. The risk should be minimal. Fisher's cell was stood down to surveillance only. Reacher decided they should stick together. There was another factor to take into account. Suppose their luck changed, and Tomasino came clean immediately, admitted to stealing all the serviceable equipment he came across, and took Reacher to his stash. Reacher didn't know what a server looked like. He needed Rutherford with him to handle the identification, and Sands had proved herself more than valuable, finding the location of the recycling plant and then duping the guy with the shotgun. A little downtime wouldn't kill them, Reacher figured, as long as they were at the depot by 4 p.m. Sands leaned across and hit some buttons on the minivan's GPS screen, which caused it to display the locations of the 5 nearest gas stations. The closest was the truck stop Reacher had visited twice before. They continued in silence, and when they arrived, Sands pulled up at the pump Reacher had used the previous night. Rutherford stayed in the car. Sands climbed out and pumped the gas. She used her credit card to avoid having to go inside the main building. Reacher went in anyway. He was hungry. He rounded up the ingredients for 4 hot dogs, assembled them, loaded them with extra cheese and onions, then grabbed a bunch of newspapers, a disposable razor, a can of shaving cream, and a pack of bottled water, figuring the others could probably use some hydration. Sands dropped Reacher and Rutherford 2 blocks from the apartment building and went to find a random spot to leave the minivan. She got back to Mitch's place 10 minutes after the others, fired up the coffee machine, then went to take a shower. Rutherford stayed in the kitchen, hunched over his computer. Reacher stretched out on the couch and made a start on the newspapers. Neither of them moved for half an hour. Neither said a word. Then Sands came out of the bathroom and Rutherford went in. She poured two mugs of coffee, carried them to the living room, and took a seat opposite Reacher.
"Can I ask you something?" Sands said. "You were in the army.
You were an MP.
You investigated things.
And people, yes?"
"That was the general idea," Reacher said. "You must have had resources. Records, databases, other soldiers who could make calls, verify information, find out if people had been telling the truth.
All of the above.
Do you miss that, now that you're on your own?"
"Life in the army was pretty good overall," Reacher said. "I worked with some outstanding people. Aside from the time I wasted dealing with bullshit from senior officers. Other than that, I left with very few regrets."
"No," Sands said. "I mean the support you had. The ability to get facts checked. If you found yourself in a particular situation, for example, and you were given a plausible account for it, then you realized there might be an alternative explanation. A much less favorable one from a certain individual's point of view. What would you do now?"
"I'd listen to my gut. If I had any doubt, I'd walk away.
Even if that meant leaving a friend in danger."
"Okay, Sarah, enough beating around the bush. What's your real question?"
"Well, when I was in the shower just now, I started thinking, what if I wanted to get something from Rusty? Something critically important, and I wanted to do it without anyone realizing. I wouldn't steal it, because he'd notice and report it missing. I wouldn't try to buy it from him or trick him into handing it over, because he might see through me. He might play along and then report the attempt, or run. I could kidnap him, of course, and force him to give it to me. But then I'd have to kill him to preserve the secret. So maybe I'd do this instead. I'd stage a kidnapping attempt. Make it look very professional, very convincing. The kind of thing that would certainly have succeeded if someone hadn't intervened. Someone with all the right skills and experience who just happened to be walking by. Someone who would instantly gain Rusty's trust and then offer to stick around and help him.
That someone being me," Reacher said.
"I'm not trying to be an asshole here, but you have to admit it's a possibility."
"It's absolutely a possibility. It wouldn't be the first time something like it happened."
"Is that supposed to make me feel better? Because it's not just the kidnap attempt that could be fishy. Every other time you've had contact with whoever we're up against, you've been on your own. A series of coincidences? Or clandestine meetings?"
Reacher smiled and looked away.
"What?" Sands said. "Is this funny to you?"
"No. It's just this town. There must be something in the water. First, I get mistaken for an insurance guy. And now you think what? Follow it through. If I'm working with these kidnappers, I must be some kind of mercenary. Someone good, because this operation wasn't thrown together on a budget. Therefore, someone expensive. So I must be secretly rich.
What's your theory?
This whole image is a sham? I really live in some Manhattan mansion with closets full of silk suits and a garage crammed with Ferraris? Is that any less likely than a retired major being homeless? I'm not homeless.
So that's one lie you told.
When?
You told Rusty you don't own a house. You just drift around. A night here, two nights there, no fixed abode.
That's true.
So you are homeless?
No. My situation is not the same at all. It's like the difference between being alone and being lonely. Two separate, distinct things.
Okay then, back up.
Say you have earned a fortune as a mercenary. It doesn't follow that you spent the money on a house and clothes and cars. That's faulty reasoning. You might not have spent the money at all. You could have stashed it all in a bank in the Cayman Islands, or hidden it inside a hollow tree, or given it to a cat shelter.
True. I could have. But I didn't.
Can you back that up?
How?
I can't prove a negative. No one can. Sands slumped back on the couch.
Try this, Reacher said. Flip it around.
I have the means and the opportunity, sure.
But what's my motive?
Money, Sands said. I'm not interested in money. I have enough already. Why would I want more?
Have you met the human race?
You're on the wrong track, Sarah. The point is, I do have a motive. To keep Rusty out of danger. You're equally capable of that. So why don't you take over? If you move him somewhere safe today, I'll walk away. I'll never come near him again.
Or with us out of the way, you'll go straight to the depot and lean on Tomasino.
Look, if you really don't trust me, talk to your friends at the Bureau. Have them run my background.
I already did. 5 minutes after I met you. They didn't find anything.
But what does that mean?
You're telling the truth?
Or you're good at covering your tracks?
I guess it boils down to this, Reacher said. I could be helping Rusty. I could be setting him up.
Only time will tell. So right now, it just depends on what you believe. And you obviously don't believe I'm in league with the devil.
What makes you so sure?
You're a smart woman. That's clear.
So if you really thought I was a hired killer, you wouldn't say so to my face. You'd drug my coffee and slip away while you had the chance. Or shoot me before I could hurt your friend.
That's an interesting theory.
Which begs another question. Who just made your coffee?
Reacher picked up his mug. It was a decent size. Maybe 8 fluid ounces. It had started out full. Now only a quarter was left. Was 6 ounces enough for an effective dose of tranquilizer? For a man his size? He didn't feel dizzy. Or nauseous. Or tired. He sniffed the remaining liquid. There was no unusual odor. It had tasted fine. But then he wasn't the world's greatest connoisseur when it came to flavor. He was mainly a fan of strength.
Here, Sans said, pass it to me.
Reacher put the mug back on the table and slid it across. Sans picked it up and took a mouthful.
I was joking about the coffee, she said,
then revealed why her robe was gaping a little that day. There was something in the pocket, something heavy. Sans reached inside and pulled it out. It was a gun, a Colt Government Model 380, small, light, reliable. She flicked the safety down with her right thumb. I'm not joking about this. And remember, you may be bigger, but I'm faster. So look me in the eye and tell me you're on the level.
I'm on the level.
Sans rested the Colt on her lap. The tips of her fingers were touching its grip. So, Reacher said after a long minute had ticked past, what are you going to do?
What choice do I have?
Do what you said. Go with my gut. Sans flicked the safety up and slipped the gun back into her pocket. And pray you don't make me regret it.
Chapter 19. Rutherford emerged from the bathroom with a towel wrapped around his waist and scurried to his sleeping area behind the wooden divider. Sans got up and followed around to hers. Reacher stayed on the couch. He could hear the others rustling and rubbing and fidgeting. Then 2 hairdryers started up almost simultaneously. They ran for almost the same length of time. There was more rustling. Then Sans reappeared. She was wearing loose linen pants and a pale blue t-shirt. She was using her sunglasses to hold back her hair, and her purse was slung over her left shoulder, positioned to ensure easy access for her right hand, Reacher thought. No doubt with the Colt at the top, maybe in a special built-in holster, so that it wouldn't get buried or snagged. Rutherford rejoined them. He had on a fresh pair of chinos and a clean polo shirt. Another somber color. Another logo. To show he still meant business. Sans left the apartment first, alone, to avoid being seen with the others. She retrieved the minivan, rendezvoused with Rutherford and Reacher in the alley with the dumpsters, and entered the waste company's address into the GPS. The machine predicted a 10-minute drive, which turned out to be accurate. It led them to a compound at the end of a long straight road with squat, shabby warehouses on either side.
The site was surrounded by a chain-link fence. It was made of heavy-gauge steel, 8 feet tall. The only entrance they could see was blocked by a red and white striped barrier. Sands drove up close and stopped next to a tall metal post. There were 2 keypads attached to it, one high, for trucks, one low, for cars. Sands wound down her window and hit the intercom button on the lower one. There was no response. She hit it again. The box didn't make a sound, not even a buzz of static. She stretched up to give the other one a try, but stopped before her finger made contact. There was movement from inside the compound. A shiny black pickup was approaching. It looked like a regular F-150. No light bar on the roof. No security company logo on the door. Sands took her fake federal ID out of her purse, just in case. The Ford slowed as it drew nearer, almost to a walking pace. The barrier twitched like it was waking from a deep sleep, then jerked its way up through 90 degrees. The pickup accelerated and sped away. The driver didn't give them a second glance. The barrier stayed up. It was swaying slightly from its recent movement, but it wasn't descending. Yet. The timing had probably been calculated with trucks in mind. Long, heavy, slow to get moving. Sands glanced around. No one else was watching, so she hit the gas and they were inside the compound long before the pole lurched back down onto its supports. There were 2 buildings on the site, set at 4 and 8 o'clock when viewed from the gate. The 8 o'clock unit was the smaller of the two. The office, Reacher assumed. It was a single story, built of rough brick, with a flat roof, 6 square windows, and a crude concrete slab sticking out to shelter its doorway. It had parking for 30 cars. Half the spaces were occupied. There were 2 silver German sedans sitting alone in the row nearest the building's entrance. The rest were middle-spec, medium-sized domestic models in varying pale colors, scattered at random throughout the rest of the lot, belonging to the office workers, most likely. Not the cars they were looking for. The 4 o'clock building must have been what the guy with the shotgun had called the depot. It was a simple rectangular shape, built out of cinder blocks, painted white, with a pitched metal roof and a line of 4 roll-up vehicle doors along one side. All were tall enough for a full-sized garbage truck to fit through. All were wide enough. All were closed. There was a single line of parking spots outside to the left of them, near a personnel door. 4 were taken, all by pickups. 3 Fords and a Dodge Ram. Not new, but clean and well-maintained. Belonging to the mechanics, Reacher figured. Not the cars they were looking for. There was an empty area on the right of the depot building. It stretched across to the fence, where the trucks parked at night. There was room for at least 6. And beyond that, where the fence turned back toward the entrance and the space narrowed, there was another line of vehicles. 7 of them. An old open-top Jeep with most of its paint missing. A Chrysler 300 sedan in black with chrome wheels and heavy tints on the windows. A Porsche 911, dark blue and gleaming in the afternoon sun. A 1980s Cadillac, originally burgundy, now chalky and dull. A mustard-colored Volvo station wagon. A tiny sky-blue Fiat. And a white Hyundai SUV. Possibly the cars they were looking for. A sign mounted to the fence said, "Unauthorized vehicles will be towed at owner's expense." Sands swung the minivan around and reversed right up to it, at the side of the Hyundai. She kept the engine running and adjusted the air. Outside, the heat shimmered off the cracked concrete slabs. The flat surfaces in the distance wobbled and danced. Sands unfastened her seatbelt and leaned back, relaxed but alert. Rutherford was beside her in the passenger seat, anxious and fidgety. Reacher stretched out behind them, so still he could have been asleep. 30 minutes passed. No trucks appeared. 15 more minutes passed with no arrivals. Then after another 5 minutes, they heard a vehicle engine, a big diesel, coming their way. Sands and Reacher simultaneously snapped upright. A garbage truck came into view at the far end of the road. It was full size, so not Tomasino's. They watched it creep along the road, negotiate the gate, lumber across to the parking area, then settled to a halt with a long hiss of its air brakes. Two men jumped down. They were wearing blue coveralls like the guy at the recycling plant. They made their way to the line of cars. The first one climbed into the Jeep. The second, the Chrysler. They set off together, driving side by side until they were close to the gate. Then the Jeep took the lead. They made it through while the barrier was still up from their entrance, accelerated hard, and soon disappeared from view. Another truck appeared 7 minutes later, also full size. So not Tomasino's. It followed the same routine. Its occupants took the Cadillac and the Volvo. That left three cars, the Hyundai, the Fiat, and the Porsche. The next truck to arrive was smaller. They had to wait until it passed them to read the license plate on the rear. It matched the entry on the recycling site log next to Tomasino's ID number. It parked alongside the two larger trucks, but it pulled farther in, vanishing from sight. A man appeared after 30 seconds. He was around 5'10". He had blonde hair buzzed short, mirrored aviator sunglasses, shiny black boots, and the same blue coveralls, only darker and crisper. Like in his mind, he was wearing a flight suit. He walked toward them, heading for the Porsche. Sands reached for her door handle, then paused. The guy was on the wrong side of the car. He went up to the Porsche's passenger window, leaned in close, cupped his hand against the sun, gazed inside for 10 seconds, then straightened up, shook his head, continued past the Fiat, and made his way between the Hyundai and the minivan. Sands jumped out and hurried around, holding her black wallet out in front. "David Tomasino," she said.
"That's me."
The guy paused.
"Who's asking?"
"Federal agents. We need to talk."
"About what?"
"Get in the van for a second. I'll explain everything." Rutherford twisted around in his seat and hit a button that caused the side door to slide open, revealing Reacher crammed inside like a caged gorilla.
"I don't think so."
Tomasino stepped back.
"I'm not getting in there with him.
I'll talk to you, but at the police station. I'll drive. You can follow." "Let me put it another way." Reacher leaned out, grabbed the front of Tomasino's coveralls, and pulled him inside. Sands climbed in after Tomasino and guided him through to the bench seat at the very back. She pulled a lever that made her middle row seat swivel around so she was facing him, then hit the button to close the door. Reacher rotated his seat as well. Rutherford peered through the gap between the front seats.
"Before we start, it's very important that you understand something," Sands said.
"We're not here for you. We're not looking to jam you up or cause you trouble of any kind. We don't care about you at all. All we want is one piece of information. Give it to us, and you can go about your business. You'll never see us again, and no one will ever know you helped us. Is that clear?"
Tomasino swallowed hard, then nodded.
"Good," Sands said.
"Now, your job is to collect unwanted electronic equipment and take it to the recycling facility outside town, correct?"
"It's just a sorting facility. The actual recycling's done somewhere else."
"But you take the electronic things there?"
"Right.
This month you've made 2 collections from the town's IT department."
"If you say so."
"That's what the site log says."
"Then I'm sure it's right."
"On one of those occasions, you picked up 8 network servers.
"I don't know what they are."
"Boring-looking black boxes," Rutherford said. "But they were in a cabinet, in the equipment room, right in the middle, with a broken glass door."
"Do you know how many things I move in a week?" Tomasino said.
"I can't remember all of them."
"I see you're wearing a wedding ring, Dave," Reacher said. "Do you have any kids, or is it just you and your wife?"
"One kid."
"On the way," Tomasino said.
"Why?"
"Boy or girl?"
"A girl? Why?"
"Because I can picture the scene," Reacher said. "Her first day of kindergarten. Your wife goes to bring her home and she says, 'Mommy, how come I don't have a daddy? All the other children do.' And your wife says, 'You do have a daddy, sweetheart. Only he's in federal prison. Because he was too stupid to help himself when he had the chance.'"
"All right."
Tomasino closed his eyes for a moment.
"I collected them.
on my second visit. They were there the first time, too, but I pretended I hadn't seen them. They were a pain in the ass to move, so I was hoping one of the regular garbage crews would take them. What did you do with them? Sans said. Put them in the truck. Then later that day, I emptied the truck at the sorting plant. Let's try that again. What? It's the truth. I believe you put them in the truck. But they never made it to the sorting plant. What happened to them? I didn't steal them, if that's what you're implying, Tomasino said. I didn't sell them. I didn't pitch them on the way. Everything that was in the truck, I unloaded at the plant. But they weren't at the plant, Sans said. We checked. So what happened to them? I have no idea. Search my house if you don't believe me. Talk to my wife, my friends. Check my bank account. I'll take a lie detector test. But I didn't steal them. I didn't sell them. And I don't know where they are. Reacher looked at Sans. She replied with the slightest shrug of her shoulders. It wasn't the answer they wanted. It didn't help them. But Reacher was inclined to believe it. He had questioned a lot of suspects over the years. He had a good sense of when someone was lying. And Tomasino seemed sincere in what he said. Okay, then. Sans took a piece of paper and a pen from her purse. I'm going to give you a number, and if you... I have a question, Rutherford said. Sarah, at the recycling place, did anything strike you as strange? No. It was just a heap of junk. Exactly. And the old weird guy? When you asked him about itemization, he said what would be the point? Computer mouse, beige, not working. Over and over. Yes, so? What are the odds of every single electronic device discarded by people in the town being broken? Surely some things would still work, even if they were old and slow. Like the servers. There was nothing wrong with them. It's like everything with life left in it had been siphoned off somehow. Tomasino looked at the floor. His first tell. Dave, Reacher said. Anything to add? Tomasino didn't answer. I wonder if your daughter will get married, Dave. I bet she will. Most people do, in the end. The question is, who will walk her down the aisle? Who will be there when she has a kid of her own? Tomasino leaned forward and held his head in his hands.
It started in my second week on the job. My boss asked me to lunch. Said there were a couple of things he needed to bring me up to speed with. So I went to meet him. At a diner. Fat Freddy's.
I know the place, Rutherford said. It's supposed to have the best milkshakes in town.
I got there first, Tomasino continued. So I sat down and waited. I got a text from the boss. He said he was running late, so I should go ahead and order. I did. And after my food came, I got another text. He said he couldn't make it after all. I finished eating and asked for my check, and the waitress told me my meal was on the house. I asked why, and she said I should hang on a minute. Someone would come and explain. Then a big fat guy appeared and sat opposite me. I think he's the owner. I thanked him, and he said it was no problem. He said I could always eat there for free. I just had to do one thing in return. Always stop in on my way to the sorting plant. And make sure my truck wasn't locked.
What did you do? Sans said.
Tried to talk my way out of it. Said my routes varied. It wouldn't always be practical. Sometimes I ran late, that kind of thing.
But he wouldn't take no for an answer.
He handed me a photograph of my wife, taken through a windshield. She was crossing the street outside her work. The car was real close to her, only a couple of feet away. She'd turned toward it. I'll never forget the look on her face. Pure terror, like she was certain she was getting run down.
Did he say anything else?
He didn't have to. The message was clear.
So you always stop there on the way to the plant, Reacher said. Can you just show up?
Or do you have to call ahead, give notice?
Just show up. And stay at least 30 minutes.
And always leave the truck in one particular spot.
Which one?
Around the back. To the side of the staff parking lot, there's a brick outbuilding. Where the dumpsters are. And where they keep the used cooking oil. There's a patch of ground marked off in yellow. I have to leave the truck there.
How many doors does the outbuilding have?
One. Right by where I have to park.
Any windows?
None.
Is the door locked?
Tomasino thought for a moment.
I guess. It has a padlock. A big one.
So while you're inside eating your free food, someone rifles through your truck, takes everything that looks valuable, and locks it in this outbuilding.
Tomasino shrugged.
What? Reacher said. Is there more to the story?
I honestly don't know. I'm in a crappy situation here. Am I really going to put my wife's life in danger over some worn-out electronics? Stuff that people have already thrown in the trash? Which is part of a racket that even my boss is in on. No, I'm not. So I see no evil and I hear no evil. I go in, I eat, I go back out. I empty the truck at the plant. If someone helped themselves to some stuff when I wasn't looking, I don't know anything about it.
Plausible deniability, Rutherford said.
I get it.
Semi-plausible, Sands said.
Plausible or not.
You went to the diner the day you picked up the servers, Reacher said.
Tomasino nodded.
And the servers were gone when you got to the plant.
I guess, Tomasino said. I mean, it's not like we keep records. But I remember the cabinet thing. It was a pain in the ass getting it into the truck. I don't remember getting it back out.
All right, Reacher said. One more question. The guy at the diner, the owner, who had the picture of your wife, what's his name?
I heard someone call him Bud,
Tomasino said. But I think his real name is Budnick. Bill Budnick. There was a story about Fat Freddy's in the paper one time, and he was mentioned about a year ago, right after he bought the place.
Good, Reacher said.
Now, did this guy Budnick ever talk to you about what to do if anyone came around asking questions about him?
No, nothing like that came up. I only spoke to him that one time.
So if we happened to visit Fat Freddy's to, say, check out their reputation for milkshakes, Budnick wouldn't be expecting us.
Would I tip him off, do you mean?
Look, that asshole threatened my wife. I wouldn't piss in his mouth if his teeth were on fire. I'd love for you to pay him a visit. I'd love for you to bust him and throw his ass in jail. Just, please, keep my name out of it.
How could we bring your name into it?